It was one of our customers. We had very good relationships, almost friends, and this gave us, let's say, a safety to start the discussions. And it took us 2.5 years to finalize that, because it was the first one. Who is the one who is winning and who is losing? By the way, this game is not, should be a win-win game.
Hello and welcome to the Gross Profit Podcast. My name is James Kennedy. I'm CEO and co-founder at procurementexpress.com. We help your SMB manage your company's spend with magical features, but we're not here today to talk about that. Instead, you should listen to this podcast if you are not growing. You're either growing or dying in business, and you've tried everything else and you're considering maybe new options for how to grow your business. You've looked at all the organic options. Perhaps there's some approach that you haven't yet considered, but you should, and that is mergers and acquisitions. So this is a topic I'm personally also very interested in. And if you have a SaaS business that could be a good acquisition target for Procurement Express, please let me know. But in the meantime, I've invited along Aristides Servas from Kleeman Group, who is one of the most experienced people I've met when it comes to M&A strategy, not within software, but within the lift business and escalator business. So Aristides, thank you very much for coming along today. And maybe you could just introduce yourself for people who don't know you and tell us a bit about your background.
Hi, James. It's a pleasure to be here with you. And you can call me Aris if it's easy for you. Let me give you a little bit about my background. So I've studied economics a long time ago in University of Athens, Greece. I'm from Greece originally. And I have a master's degree from Leicester University in England in business analysis. And I have worked mainly in industrial companies, manufacturing. So started from soft drinks, Coca-Cola Hellenic. Then for 1 year moved to a bank, National Bank of Greece, the biggest in Greece. And then for Frigoglass, which is the industrial arm of Coca-Cola Hellenic, producing refrigerators with glass door. And the last 13 years, I'm working for Kleeman Group, 10 years as a group CFO, and the last 8 months as chief M&A and investment officer. My main responsibility the last 7 years was to help the company grow inorganically through mergers and acquisitions.
So just tell me, what led you to want to move into M&A? The CFO role is the big job. It's the king of finance. But what led you want to progress into M&A specifically?
Yes, you know, at a certain point, the companies have to decide if they want to grow and how fast they want to grow. In the past, we have seen that there were companies that used to produce, and there are independent companies that used to buy, install and maintain those systems. The last, I would say, 20 years, there is a big consolidation. So the big companies are going into a vertical integration, everything from the factory to the final customer and to the service contracts, which are in reality the most profitable ones. So this has been started by our big competitors, the big four, like Otis, Kone, Schindler and Thyssen. Either we are in the game or we are losing the game. So after losing several customers of ours because somebody else bought them out, we decided to start buying our customers and somebody else's customers as well. So it's also, let's say, a survival strategy, especially for us.
That's very interesting. So in this market, it's a maturing market with some very dominant players. Those names are almost household names. A lot of people would be familiar with them. And it's interesting that it's actually almost not to do with growth, almost, but survival. If you're not growing, all these other companies are going to buy you out and you need to own the distribution.
Kleeman is started as a company that took the Kleeman brand name from a German one who was the expert, let's say, in hydraulic lifting systems, introduced those systems to Greece. After a while, this German Kleeman was bought out by another one, so they gave us the name by paying some royalties in the beginning, I believe, first 10 years. And then from starting building hydraulic systems for Greece, the company has progressed, built a factory to produce the whole package of the elevator, the hydraulic elevator at that time, with the main focus in Greece. Gradually, we have introduced the traction elevator, which is a trend now. And just a little bit before the global financial crisis, 2008-2010, the company invested in exports a lot, get out of Greece, and this was the main reason that it has been survived. I remember when I joined the company, the global revenue was around 80 million euro. Now it is 220, and more than 90% is outside Greece. So it's a really global international company with factories and trading companies around the world, almost 20 around the world. 60 million out of the 220 are coming from acquisitions.
That's a massive success story. It must be one of the fastest growing businesses I've heard of. I mean, that's fantastic. And it makes me think as well, for me, in our industry, especially software is getting commoditized, it's becoming cheaper, maybe, you know, AI to make software easier. It's not an option just to sit back and maybe not consider this. If you want to thrive, it's maybe an imperative. That's the strategy. I see the background. It's almost like a survival mechanism. And obviously you've turned in, you're either thriving or dying. So what are the financial indicators or KPIs you look for when evaluating your potential acquisition targets? What type of business does it need to be worth your time to consider?
Yes, we are looking for business that are installing and maintaining lifts and elevators. So some of them are our customers, some of them not. Why? Because this is the part of the business which is the most profitable one. So manufacturing doesn't give you big profit. Services are giving the big profit, so we need to be there. One main KPI, I mean, when we formulate, let's say, a five-year business plan is by acquiring those companies to increase the EBITDA. Because I'm going to give you some rough numbers. The manufacturing part has an EBITDA of around 3 to 4%. The service part has an EBITDA of 25 to 30%. So you can imagine that when we are able to have a big part of our business coming from services, the overall EBITDA of the group and the cash flow is improving. Right now, we have only 10% of our business coming from services. 90% is coming from the manufacturing. So the intention is to increase that part and obviously the profitability.
So a business that obviously is profitable, not necessarily growing. How are those deals typically structured in broad terms? You don't have to go into detail, but how does the owner, do they get bought out altogether? Do they walk out the door? How do you entice them to make sure that they still stay engaged with the business and grow the business after the acquisition?
Okay, before that, we need to, let's say, create a pipeline with targets that fit to our strategy. So it means in selected markets that we are strong enough, or maybe we have a base, we have already a trading company on ourselves, profitable businesses, and businesses that fit our culture, because the most difficult part is after the acquisition. We need to achieve synergies, we need to integrate those companies. The benchmark is saying that 70 to 80% of those cases fail. And by failing, I don't mean that there is a disaster. You don't get as much as you thought. And it takes more time, let's say, to get the extra benefit. So preparation is very important in order to be able to achieve those synergies. So after we identify the targets, we can approach them either directly or through agents. So there are agents in the market that can find you and approach those companies with a cold call. You know, we need to be very careful because the market is small and the next day everybody knows the discussions are there, even if you have signed several NDAs. Sometimes you want the owners to stay and sometimes you don't want them to stay, depending on the market and the specific situation. By buying 100% of the business, you can do whatever you want, but this is something that you can do it in a market that you are already established. For example, in UK, we have already bought 4 different companies. So if we go for the fifth one, we don't need the owners to stay. We just need the key personnel to stay and the good managers to stay because we have the infrastructure to support all the rest. If we go in a country that we don't have, let's say, a big presence, maybe it's important to keep the older managers there. I have a specific example in the United States of America that we've acquired during the COVID period, a company in New York, and we have agreed with the owners to stay and grow together with us. And there are ways to convince those guys. For example, let's say you buy a percentage, 70-80%, they keep the rest, and you have an option to buy them out in the future at a much higher valuation. So they have the motivation to increase the profits of the company. I mean, if you buy them with a multiple of the profits, they have a big interest in working towards that direction. So you put some KPIs, you discuss with them, agree the way forward, and then you deliver the results.
Yeah, so they have what they call two bites of the cherry. So they get their payday, and then they get, you know, still engaged and be able to grow the business and be aligned with that. I kind of understand the spreadsheet side of it, right? So, okay, you get money and you look for acquisition and certain EBITDA and so on. When it comes to values, you mentioned that. How do you go about that? Is that a steak dinner, getting to know them, or is it some sort of psychological test? What are the white flags that say, hey, this guy is going to work well with this, or this company has a good fit for us versus a company that would not?
So values and culture is important because it helps with integration. It's always a challenge. But okay, in our specific case, Kliman is a family company. So it's good to find another company that works as a family. So maybe it's the founder there or the second generation, not the third or the fourth. And they do care about what is going to happen to the people after they leave, because it is important for us and for them. So we are looking to this kind of approach. We are a human-centric company, so we believe that somebody who is selling the company and wants the new owner to take care of the people is very close to our culture.
Sounds like it's easy for you guys, because you have a list of all the distributors, and then I guess you find which ones are owned by families, which fits with your culture. And I guess that must be a lot of comfort for them to know that they are merging with a family business as well. So that also helps to get you in the deals. Maybe I'd like to bring you back to, you know, your first acquisition. It must be pretty nerve-wracking. It's a big thing, big numbers involved. You get it wrong, I imagine it can be damaging to the business, to everyone. In your first transaction, what were your biggest fears or worries about what would go right or wrong? And what gave you the confidence, the bravery to do it?
That was 7-8 years ago in Australia, Sydney. And it was one of our customers, a very good one. We had very good relationships, almost friends. And this gave us, let's say, a safety to start the discussions. And it took us 2.5 years to finalize that. Because it was the first one. Imagine that the last one took us only 6 months in UK. That was a year ago. So there was the fear by both sides, if we do something wrong, or if maybe we are losing something along the way, maybe we don't negotiate so good, what is going to happen afterwards, who is be the one who is winning and who is losing. By the way, this game should be a win-win game. But you know, if you don't have the experience and it's your first time, okay, for the buyer, could be the 10th or the 20th time. For the seller, is always the first one. But if both of them are beginners, you understand that we are trying to find a way to cooperate. And at the end of the day, maybe a few beers are helping to to overcome all the problems.
That's interesting because, relationships, just knowing the person's intentions, like I guess if people ask me, who should I go into business with if they're starting want to start a business? I always say, well, who do you already know? Who did you go to school with? Like, who do you really trust? How many transactions have you done now? And how is your attitude different? What were you worried about that you did not need to be worried about in that first transaction?
I've done more than 20 transactions now, the last 6-7 years. And okay, it comes naturally now. There are important things that we need to focus on. So I would say that at the part before the acquisition, we need to educate the seller about some things that might come up and destroy the deal. For example, how to manage the lawyers, the solicitors, is very important. Because when we are close to sign the final documents of the transactions, they will come up with proposals to change things here and there to play safe with their customers. So if both ways work like that, there's no deal. So we need to educate the seller that this will happen at a certain point of time to be ready mentally to manage that. And the most important point is, before the acquisition, to have the plan what to do after the acquisition. It is the so-called acquisition or integration playbook. You need to know what are you going to say and to disclose at the first day when you acquire the new company and you introduce yourself to the people, and to have a very good plan, at least for the first 3 months, with actions, how to integrate the company. Because either you are risking to lose good people and to create, let's say, an unpleasant atmosphere in the company that is acquired, because every change is difficult for mentally for people. Even if a bigger company is buying you out and you feel normally more secure, you will not lose your job. There are a lot of opportunities for promotion, for everything. People don't think that. People think bad things when something changes. They think, who is going to come? We are going to be fired. We are going to suffer, and things like that. So if you have prepared yourself what to say and how to say and how to communicate, especially all those things from the first moment, this will make your life easier, much easier. Communication is the name of the game. And, you know, I've heard somebody saying that if sometimes you believe that you are overdoing it with communication, you are in the right path. Do some more.
So let's go post-acquisition then. This sort of sounds like a charm offensive. Aris, I know you're a charming guy, so I've seen it. Every time you hear of an acquisition, you think of cost cutting, right? You think of, oh, maybe we can reduce costs and improve the EBITDA, et cetera. And that's what the fear is in their mind. So do you personally fly out there and meet everyone, or do you get people from your whole team, or how does it work?
You don't need a very big team. You need the major people that have been involved in the acquisition, and even the CEO, if he's available. Say specific things the day one, for example, the day one, who will be the new general manager of the company? What is the reporting structure? And what is the strategy? Even if you are going to dismiss some people, tell them the first day. And then everybody else is feeling safe that there is no problem and they will stay there. Okay, the basic things. And then you tell them that there is a plan for the next 3 months and that you will involve people from the acquired company in this plan. So they will feel that they are part of the game. And obviously, we need to organize, let's say, every 15 days, a town hall, discussing with the people about certain issues, different issues every time.
So it sounds like if there is any bad news, get that out of the way straight away so everyone else is confident and then you can move forward. So let's speak a little bit about some of the logistics, I guess, of expanding internationally.
In our cases, the transactions are not huge, and we are not buying companies that have a lot of assets in the balance sheet that are in different currencies, so therefore we should hedge. The hedging is coming naturally, but it is something that we need to consider, and especially to match it with the cash flows. We work with local lawyers, okay? But before we start the discussions to acquire a company, during the pre-due diligence phase, let's say, we examine also the legal framework of the company and if there is any other issues, I mean, concerning competition or whatever. Because it happened to us. We acquired the company in Serbia. Serbia is a small country. And when you acquire, you are subject to the competition committee. So we were waiting 6 months to get the approval, even if the transaction was small. For them, Kliman is considered a big company, so we need to get that approval. We got it finally, but okay, it took 6 months. The bureaucracy is big over there. And it's something that we didn't know, even if we have a factory over there. We didn't know that in case of acquisition, it would be so heavy bureaucracy. So it's good to examine the legal system of the country beforehand.
Shifting gears a bit, I mean, outside of work, maybe when you're not looking for mergers and acquisitions, how do you relax and unwind and recharge for business?
I like to try sports. I used to play basketball when I was younger, but now I'm playing squash. So I exercise, I walk my dog, and I read books.
Squash, that's a hardcore sport. You're hard on your knees. You need to be a fit man to play a good game of squash. So. You're not relaxing.
you are relaxing mentally.
Aris, thank you very much for taking time. I've definitely learned a lot in this discussion. So it was very useful for me, and even to get some insight specifically, you know, the post-acquisition plan, getting bad news out of the way, what to look for. Yeah, it's been really cool. So thank you very much for being on the Gross Profit Podcast.
Thank you very much as well. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Thanks very much for listening. If you have an M&A story you'd like to come and talk to us about on the show, I'd love to hear it. You can reach out to myself at james.kennedy@procurementexpress.com. Aris, how can people reach out to you if they'd like to find out more or are curious about what you do?
Yes, they can find me through my LinkedIn account, and I'm very happy to discuss with anybody who would like to get a consultation about how to acquire a company or even how to sell a company. Okay, I have a network that can help you with that.
All right, that's all for now, and I'll see you in the next one.